How would you like to attend a conference and hear Matt Harrison, Craig Parton, Jonathan Fisk, Will Wheaton, Chris Roseborough, and Al Schmidt? You're invited to the 2014 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 13th and 14th in Collinsville, Illinois. Registration is $100 per person. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 13th and 14th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org.
We had 58,500 missionaries in October of 2012. We've shot up to over 80,000, almost 82,000 today serving. God is hastening His work. He's speeding it up. We have a sense that there's an urgency about spreading the message of the gospel across the world. I think it would be very safe to say that this was inspired from heaven.
Is this something you always wanted to do?
Nope, it's not.
So why are you here?
Because the idea of having an empty seat in heaven troubles me.
That's the voice of Steve Allen. He's managing director of the Mormon Church's Missionary Department, and an interview on PBS Religion Ethics News Weekly with one of the elders, that's what they're called, but they're the missionaries, these young men now 18 years old who go out on two-year missionary journeys voluntarily in the name of the Mormon Church and are seeking converts. Now, they used to knock on your door, but they don't do that so much anymore. They've realized that that is really a no-starter in a lot of the places where they go, and they go worldwide. Why has the age been lowered from 19 to 18? And what effect has that had on the mission efforts of the Mormon Church? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Monday afternoon. It's the 2nd of June. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Eric Johnson, Associate Researcher for Mormonism Research Ministry, will be with us to talk about the lowering of the missionary age in Mormonism a little bit later. We'll talk about the existence of God, a particular argument for the existence of God in the face of more proselytizing atheism, shall we say, the Kalam cosmological argument. You'll find out what it's all about when we talk with Dr. Joshua Pagan a little bit later in the program. Pastor Tom Baker will join us later on this Monday afternoon to teach a Sunday school lesson, as he does every week, The Children of Israel Crossing the Red Sea. That's Exodus chapter 14. Now, you can join us for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. Eric Johnson joins us to talk about the lowering of the missionary age in Mormonism and the effect it has on their missionary efforts. He's Associate Researcher for Mormonism Research Ministry, based in Draper, Utah, and he's co-author of the books Mormonism 101 and Answering Mormons' Questions. Eric, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd, for having me.
I got to wonder, what role, from two perspectives, what role does sending out 18-year-old men and women, well, the women are a little bit older when they're allowed to go out, for a two-year missionary journey, what role does that play for the Mormon Church as a greater whole, and for these individuals who go out as missionaries in their own theological perspective?
Well, for the Mormon Church, it's their faith, and people will know the Mormon Church in countries all over the world based on the bicycles for the men wearing the white shirts and the name badges and the sisters wearing dresses. And so that, for them, gives them a very clean, innocent look. And I think PR-wise, I think that's been very successful for them over the years. As far as the people who go, now, as you mentioned, the men can go at a year younger than they used to be, at 18, and that gives them the ability to mature. And I think for a lot of these boys that do go out, and the girls as well, they may not even be very strong in their faith. They come back after 2 years for the men and 18 months for the gals, oftentimes much more strong in their faith, and I think for many it has kept their people in the church. And what ends up happening for a boy, especially when he comes off his mission, he becomes one of the most popular returning people ever, and the girls line up. And I know that for a fact because I live in Utah and I have friends who are LDS. And within 6 months, oftentimes, they're engaged already, as the girls will line up, because to get a return missionary as a husband is a pretty good trophy, and they know that that man is probably going to be faithful. So I think it works both ways for the church itself, for the PR perspective, and I think for the Mormons themselves, many of them who have grown up in the church, it's going to hopefully keep them in for years to come.
Now, the age change from 19 to 18 and from 21 to 19 for the girls, respectively, came at the direction of the living prophet, Monson.
Right.
And we heard Steve Allen say there, the managing director of the Mormon Church's missionary department, we heard him say that it's safe to say that this age change is divinely inspired. What does he mean by that?
Well, what he's trying to insinuate is that somehow God gave the idea to Monson to be able to do that. I think it was an administrative move. It doesn't cost the church anything because all they did was just move ahead and actually has been very successful for them to get more females. In fact, when they had all the applications come in when that announcement was made, the females were like four times more likely because many of the girls would get married before the time they were supposed to go to serve their 18 months. And now at 19, they're more likely not to get married. And so the roles of the females just went skyrocketing. But if he's going to suggest that this is God's doing, that to me, that doesn't make any sense because in the Mormon missionaries are at currently 85,000, as you mentioned, and before they were less than 60,000. Well, within a year, they'll be back down to 60,000. All they did was have double the missionaries this year. That's what that has amounted to. And so I can predict, and I'm not a prophet necessarily, but I can predict a year from now we'll be talking about 60,000 or even less of the missionaries. So if this was really God's divine calling, then you would think, well, 80,000 missionaries should be the norm, and it's not going to be.
So we also heard there in the open one of these young elders who's in training right now,
yep.
And he was interviewed by PBS's Religion and Ethics News Weekly this week, and he was asked, is this something you always wanted to do? His answer was rather honest. He said, no, but an empty seat in heaven troubles me. What does that mean from a Mormon perspective?
Well, and that's what troubles me as well, as far as wanting to see people become believers is a very important thing for us as Christians who are on the front lines, and any person who's a Christian who's sharing his faith. That's our idea as well. But what he's trying to say is if people are out there not joining their church, they don't have the chance to get the very best this religion has to offer, which is called the celestial kingdom. And the goal in Mormonism is to be exalted through baptism in the Mormon church, by doing your ordinances in the temple, getting married for time and eternity. These are all things you do enduring to the end. But, you know, the idea that everybody's going to get to go to heaven. So unless you understand a little bit of the language, according to Mormonism, all people, because of their valiance in the pre-existence, it's called in Mormonism, where we all existed as spirit children of Heavenly Father and Heavenly Mother, and we chose Jesus as the Savior of this world rather than Lucifer. Well, one-third of our brothers and sisters in this pre-existence state were cast out of heaven because they did not side with Jesus, but we all did. So by the atonement of Jesus Christ, they'll use the same language we do, by the atonement of Jesus, they believe that all people will have a chance to go to one of three levels of heaven. There is not really a hell for those of us who are here on this earth because of our valiance in a previous state. So it's kind of a misnomer, you know, empty seat in heaven. Well, to be more specific, possibly an empty seat in the celestial kingdom where Mormons hope that someday they can be with their family forever and to be able to do what Heavenly Father did before them, which he once was a human being with flesh and bones on another world, and the idea that the Mormon man and the Mormon woman can have children on a next life and be able to do the whole process all over again.
So what do these young men and women actually do in the 18 months to 2 years that they are out as the face of Mormonism? They used to go door to door quite often, but I've noticed they don't do that so much anymore. What are they supposed to be doing day by day?
Well, first, what they do is they have to go to a missionary training center. Oftentimes, they'll go here in Provo if they're from the United States to learn a language. Within 6 weeks, they'll learn the basics of a language to be able to then go and be successful in that country. And in 2 years, they can come back fully fluent. But so when they brought in so many new missionaries, they didn't have places for them, so they sent them right out, and they learn on the job, so to speak. But as far as what they're doing, they are doing a lot of different kinds of things because they have so many of these missionaries that are out there. That they have them on the Internet now, for instance. They're on Facebook. They're actually looking for conversations. They go into chat rooms. And so, which is kind of interesting, because think about it. You put an 18-year-old boy, now we've got the maturity level a lot less than even 19, and he's on the Internet, and certainly he's doing his job playing on Facebook, but there are other things perhaps he could be seeing, and that intrigues us, because if you type in the word Mormonism on the Internet, of the top 10 sites, besides the LDS.org, which is their official site, and they can pay to have as one of the top 10 searches on Google, but most of the sites you're going to see are what they consider anti-Mormon sites, sites that are not friendly to Mormonism. And you go through those sites, and the information is there. You have to understand, in 1990, this church grew by 330,000 converts. That was over a 4% rate of growth, which it was going crazy back in 1990. But then if you go to 2000, and starting in 2002, they haven't grown by 300,000 since, and their numbers of growth, of convert growth, has sunk to less than 2%. So last year, they grew by 4,000 more converts to 285,000 converts than they did the year before. But they had several dozen more thousand more missionaries out there. They had a lot more of resource to be able to get more converts, and they got a few thousand more. And so even by inundating the missionary forces and sending them out, they still haven't found the success that you would think they should have had by increasing their roles of by over 50% of the missionaries. You would think that they would have had 20, 30, 40%. No, they grew by a little bit, but not much.
And do we have any statistics? I wouldn't be surprised if they don't exist or they're not public, on how many people actually are leaving the Mormon Church in those years.
And you know, that's a really good question, Todd, because we're at the mercy of the Mormon Church to tell us what their roles are up and down, and they're very big on numbers. We don't know if they take people off. If you get baptized, this is something to consider if a listener is hearing this and was once baptized in the Mormon Church 20 years ago, 10 years ago, whenever that was. It could be in the first 3 weeks of meeting the missionary. They get baptized. That name is on their church roll. If they decide they're going to leave and they don't want to bother with it, their name stays on the church rolls. And so some estimates have made it out to be that 15 million Mormons are out there, but really active, maybe 3 to 4 million converts, because they're not taking people off of the rolls. You have to go through a process. It's possible to do. If people go to our website, mrm.org, we have information there on how you can go about getting your name removed, and it doesn't even require you having to be interviewed. That's, I think, scary for a lot of ex-Mormons, and there's a lot of political baggage for ex-Mormons because maybe they have Mormon family still and they don't want to rock the boat. They just want to get out of that thing, but at the same time, if their name is still on there, they're being counted as that number, and it makes it sound so successful. Yet, even though there are 15 million supposed Mormons out there, how many active? Nobody knows. I don't even think the Mormon Church knows.
Eric Johnson is our guest. We're talking about the lowering of the missionary age in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints on this Monday afternoon, June the 2nd. You can join us with questions or comments on Mormonism, 1-877-623-MYIE. Or talk back at issuesetc.org.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc. We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
That first presentation will be on how lawyers look at making the case for the reliability of the New Testament.
Craig Parton talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
The information we have about Jesus, primarily about his life and death and resurrection, primarily comes from the four Gospels, certainly from the rest of the New Testament. But if the record we have of Jesus Christ can't be relied on, we're doomed.
You can meet and hear Craig Parton making the case for the historical Jesus June 13th and 14th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, June 13th and 14th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Well, no, we don't talk about door-to-door, although missionaries are certainly free to do that. But we talk about contacting on the streets, and we talk about mostly working through the members. The members would invite their friends to visit with the missionary.
We talk to members. We ask people if we're going to the store to buy something. We ask the clerk at the store, or we ask the person working there, who do you know that needs help in their life in this moment? Who do you know that could benefit from having a little more of Jesus Christ, our Savior, in their lives? And they tell us.
That's Carl Pratt, president of the Missionary Training Center for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Mexico City, and one of the trainees there preparing to begin his mission in a Latin American country from this weekend's PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly, dealing with the lowering of the missionary age in Mormonism, the temporary bump in the total number of missionaries they will have out there in the field from around 60 to 80,000 missionaries now at 18 years old and 19 years old. For men and women, respectively. Eric Johnson is our guest. We're discussing this change. He's associate researcher for Mormonism Research Ministry in Draper, Utah, and co-author of the books Mormonism 101 and Answering Mormons' Questions. We were talking about what these young men and women actually do when they go out. They undergo this training, and then they live a pretty Spartan life for the next 18 months to 2 years, don't they?
They certainly do. And, well, if they get stationed here in Utah, they pretty much are fed every night by a different family in the local ward. But if you live outside of Utah and you have missionaries come to your door, first off, don't be scared. I mean, I don't know how many 18 or 19-year-old theologians you have in your church, in your Christian church, but these guys are just kids, you know, and they're nice. They're good people. Let them come on inside, give them a cold drink, and then invite them to dinner, and you'll be surprised at how a home-cooked meal will work these guys and have them come back. And so just being able to be friendly and helping them to understand that we really do care about them. I think a lot of Christians are well-meaning, and they slam doors in these guys' face. And these guys are dedicating themselves for 2 years or 18 months and waking up at 4:30 in the morning, going to bed 10 or 11 at night. They get one day off a year, and that, one day off a week that they get Mondays off usually to do their laundry and all the rest, and they can only call home twice a year. That's what I was going to say earlier. They call home on Mother's Day and on Christmas. And those are the two times they're allowed to call. And it's a big deal on Christmas Eve. I've talked to missionaries, and they can't wait for Christmas Day because they get to talk to home. And they can, I guess they can do it for 10 hours at a time because they pretty much are just talking and talking. But they're allowed to email and other things like that. But for the most part, they have dedicated themselves to sharing what they believe is the truth. What are they willing to do for a lie that we as Christians are not always willing to do for the truth? I think we need to understand that. And if we have that kind of understanding, then maybe we have more compassion for them instead of slamming doors in their face or telling them they're going to hell.
Once they have returned, you said they kind of are minor returning heroes if they've come back from their their mission here. But they are now considered, if I'm not mistaken, kind of having taken a first and crucial step toward becoming what is commonly referred to, at least the men, as a temple Mormon. What role does the missionary work play in becoming kind of the full-fledged Mormon?
Yeah, well, I mean, when they become missionaries, they will get temple recommends, which is necessary to be able to enter into a temple. You have to abide by the dietary law, no hot drinks like the coffee or tea. You have to wear special garments. There's a number of rules that they have to keep. So they'll go through that that for themselves. Then when they get married, they will go through with their spouse, and they will learn special new names and the ordinances that are in there that will be for them that they will need when they die someday to be able to go into the celestial kingdom, the top level of heaven. And so they already have that temple recommend, and once they are released, as long as they're keeping the rules, they are interviewed every 2 years by the bishop and the stake president, who will confirm that they are doing everything they need to be considered worthy to be a temple Mormon. And only temple Mormons have the chance, as I said, to be able to go to the very best that this religion has to offer.
So this missionary work that they do at the tender age now of 18 years old,
mm-hmm.
is really vital to their standing with the church. It's really vital to their standing as a temple Mormon, and ultimately they believe in the life to come.
Oh, absolutely. They feel that this work is so important. And for, you know, motives, we can always question motives, but for many of these Latter-day Saints, it's almost they're almost more on this mission for themselves than they are for others. Not true for everybody, but I've met missionaries who pretty much feel it's, they call it their duty, and it's their duty to God that they need to do this. And so by doing that, there is a social standing in the church for years to come, because in the local chapels, the local wards where they meet, they'll be asked by people they don't know, well, where'd you serve your mission? And if you don't have that, as especially for a boy, the boys are more needing to go on this, it's considered as a social necessity than the females. And if you don't have a place where you can say, I went to Honduras for the 2 years, then it's almost like you're looked down upon. So there's a social standing that is important for these guys.
So what happens to a young man who either because he simply doesn't want to or doesn't go through the proper channels, and it is rather extensive to even get to go on one of these? What happens if he doesn't go?
If he doesn't go, like I said, it's more of a social standing. It's not like he's any lesser in the church. He can still be a temple Mormon. He can do the everything that a Mormon can do. It's just, I think it's more for getting a wife, it's going to be a little harder, because a lot of the girls have always dreamed about marrying a returned missionary. And so I think they're going to pay more a social cost than they will any kind of a cost within the church. Maybe they won't be able to become a bishop as easily, which is a local leader, volunteer, who is like a pastor of 200 people at a local chapel. Perhaps those kinds of positions won't be as readily available. But for a lot of the guys who don't go, they probably just don't care that much.
What if they wash out?
That happens, and if they do, they get sent home, and that's dishonorable. If you get sent home from your mission, they will have a party for the boys that come back. It's a big deal. They speak at this special meeting. Everybody comes from the local ward. He's a hero. You don't get any of that. It's a problem. A friend of mine, Michael Wilder of Adams Road Band, you may be familiar with, and his mom just wrote a book, Lynn Wilder. Micah became a Christian while he was on his mission. He was challenged by a pastor in Florida that he needed to read his Bible as a little child, as Micah was trying to convert the pastor so that he could convert the whole church, this pastor's church. So Micah took him up on his offer, and he started to read the epistles without the presuppositions that Mormonism has, and he started to see a different Jesus than what he had understood, and he ends up becoming a Christian. Well, the last week before he ended up coming home, when he was done with his 2 years, the tradition is those gentlemen go up in front of all the missionaries and share their testimony, and Micah did. And when he did that, he ended up getting reprimanded and ended up getting sent home a week earlier. Now, he worked it out where he did not get sent home with dishonor, but still, it was a shock to the parents, Mike and Lynn Wilder. And he ended up coming back to Utah just for a week, and then he went right back to Florida because of all the scrutiny. So it's a black eye if you end up having to come home with dishonor.
So you mentioned before that this bump, and it's a rather significant bump in the total number of missionaries in the field for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, is entirely temporary because they've simply doubled the number of applicants that they've allowed in. What do you think?
Right.
What do you think the future prospects for this particular aspect of Mormonism is, and for the Mormon Church, if this proves untenable in the future, that you'll have fewer and fewer missionaries, fewer and fewer converts? What does that do to Mormonism that pretty much bases its identity on the fact that it's a growing enterprise?
Well, and that is what a lot of people will point to, and it was kind of pointed out in that piece that you shared, that this is God obviously wanting this work to continue and grow, and a lot of Mormons like to point out, well, what about all the fruit? If Mormonism is wrong, then why is it one of the fastest-growing churches? I don't think a lot of Latter-day Saints really know that it's not growing anywhere close in the percentage rates that it used to. And the Jehovah's Witnesses last year grew by more converts, and it has half the membership across the world. So I think this is a problem, and we're seeing a lot of internal grumblings. There was what was called the Swedish Rescue in 2010. A couple of church historians went to Sweden to try to squash some of the historical issues that were bothering the saints there and gave very poor answers, and a number of people have left because of that. And I'm going to tell you, in the kind of ministry that we do, the kind of ministry that Sandra Tanner of Utah Lighthouse does, we are seeing people coming out, flooding out of the church, and they're looking for what is true. We see a lot of people end up becoming atheists because they want to throw the baby out with the bathwater because they were burned once in this church, so they want to throw Jesus out, and we try to tell them don't, but we are seeing a lot of people become Christians, realizing there are so many issues, and I mentioned before, the internet has been a boon for us. We, like I said, type in the word Mormon or Mormonism, and you're going to see Mormon.org in there in the top 10, but you're going to see ministries like Carm.org, ex-Mormon.org, our website will be on there, MRM.org, and so the information that shows that the Book of Mormon is not a historical book, that Joseph Smith was married to 33 women, 11 of whom were married to other men and 11 who were teenagers, information that maybe even the people inside the church don't know, let alone potential converts. And once people understand that this religion is based on a hope and a prayer, they want something more than that.
Eric Johnson is Associate Researcher for Mormonism Research Ministry based in Draper, Utah, co-author of the books Mormonism 101 and Answering Mormons' Questions. You'll find a link both to these books and to Mormonism Research Ministry at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Eric, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the existence of God, about, well, not so much Christianity, but what it is atheism says it is fighting, a mere belief in God. Is there rational high ground for the atheist? Is there an argument that does not appeal to divine revelation for the existence of God? We'll answer all those questions on this Monday afternoon, June the 2nd, with Dr. Joshua Pagan right after this.
Every week, Ravinelli's Restaurant and Carryout cooks up 29,000 pieces of chicken, 980 gallons of meat sauce, 310 loaves of fresh bread, and 200 fresh pies and cakes. Ravinelli's Restaurant and Carryout in Granite City, Collinsville, and O'Fallon, Illinois. Ravinelli's.com. Ravanellis.com. Ravinelli's Restaurant and Carryout.
Have you wondered what classical Lutheran education is all about? Are you a Lutheran homeschooler, pastor, or teacher? Would you like to be equipped to teach more effectively? Join the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education July 15th through the 17th at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Find the conference schedule recently posted at ccle.org. Discover the education that is our Lutheran heritage, ccle.org.
Whether building a new home, remodeling an existing home, or tackling the weekend project, it is important to have the materials and advice needed to get the job done. RP Lumber offers estimates for professional building materials and services for drywall, decking, siding, shingles, cabinets, and kitchen and bath design to the general contractor and the individual homeowner. Delivery available with over 50 local community locations. For 37 years, RP Lumber.
As sure as his resurrection, an Easter sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
He meets us here, not just an empty cross, not just an empty tomb, but the very risen Christ himself, the one who is the resurrection and the life.
We'll send you a CD of this sermon and a sermon on Job for any size gift during the 50 days of Easter. Make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support during the Easter season.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Augsburg Lutheran, Shawnee, Kansas. Peace Lutheran, Fresno, California. Trinity Lutheran, Casper, Wyoming. Memorial Lutheran, Houston, Texas. Trinity Lutheran, Gillette, Wyoming. Our Savior Lutheran, Ridgecrest, California. St. Mary's Lutheran, Des Moines, Iowa. Redeemer Lutheran, Kakabeka Falls, Ontario, Canada. St. Jacoby Lutheran, Shawano, Wisconsin. And St. John's Lutheran, North Prairie, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.